Hey everyone, this is Josh, co-founder of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor Podcast. Our guest today is Marine veteran Miguel Linares. Miguel was born in Westminster, California. He enlisted in the Marine Corps as an aviation mechanic, but after 9/11, Miguel wanted to go fight and changed his job to infantry rifleman. He got what he asked for and ended up fighting his way through Nasiriyah's ambush alley during the Iraq invasion of 2003. Miguel talks us through what life was like for him in combat, after combat, and how his wife contributed to pulling him out of a dark place upon transitioning out of the military. If you enjoy this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor and know anyone else who may, reach out to us on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you can email us at team@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
Okay, my name is Miguel Linares. I was in the Marine Corps, 0311. From 2001 to 2005, active duty, and re-enlisted in the Marine Corps Reserves from 2009 to 2015. I got out of active duty as a corporal, went into the reserves, promoted to sergeant, and I stayed a sergeant the entire time. So originally from Orange County, born in Westminster, mom and dad, both Mexican immigrants. My mom and my dad split when I was about 3, and I was raised by a stepdad. I don't think he liked us too much. So it was really tough around my house. He was really strict. A lot of lessons were, you know, on the back of his hand or the end of his knuckles. So it was tough growing up. But my mom and my stepdad both worked really hard. I feel like I was raised by just my mom. My stepdad was there. He kind of just as an enforcer. I didn't really get a lot of love, but, I guess, you know, it's life.
What inspired you to join the military?
I actually remember the day. It was in high school. I remember being around the quad, I think it was my junior year, and everyone's in awe. Everyone's like, oh, there's all this murmuring going around. I remember just walking through the quad with a buddy, and we look over, and everyone just focused, laser focused. Everyone's just talking about this Marine in his dress blues. And I'm sure they frequented our high school, but it didn't hit till like I saw what happened that moment. And walking down the quad, he walks past and every girl is just laser focused. And they're like, oh, this dreamy Marine, he's so hot. And the fucking teachers are gathered around and everyone's just like, even the dudes are probably fucking jocking this guy. And I remember that response and I just remember looking around and I was like, this is what I want. When I walk in a room, I want that response. And I had a U.S. history teacher whose son, I think, was in the Marine Corps, and he talked great things, but it all just started clicking at once. And I remember following him out and I was like, hey, how you doing, man? My name is Miguel. I was like, what do you do? He's like, oh, I'm in the Marine Corps. He's like, are you interested? And, you know, he gives you that whole selling pitch. He's like, what grade are you in? He's like, what do you want to do when you get out? And I had absolutely no fucking idea. My parents weren't rich. I didn't plan on going to college. It wasn't even a thought in my mind. But I remember all the questions and all the attention I got after leaving the conversation with him, because no one dared to approach him. No one said anything. He probably had just left a meeting with a principal or something, you know, talking on behalf of one of the students. And I remember getting his card and him walking away. And I remember thinking that's what I want. I want to be a Marine. My senior year, my parents signed the paperwork to go ahead and put me in a debt program and go to boot camp, if and when I graduated. Cause I had some pretty bad grades. So the gentleman that I got the card from, I don't recall his name, but when I went in to talk to the recruiter's office out of Mission Viejo, there was another guy there. He's like, I can help you. And this dude was fucking jacked, big dude, really good shape. He was a Sergeant Beard. And I remember talking with him and he's like, puts all the little wood chips, the little placards down. Tell me in order, what's important to you? And of course, it doesn't matter what you pick. They're going to sell you on that, you know, family, you know, financial response, you know, all this stuff. And the Marine Corps offered everything. And I was like, I you don't need a sales pitch, man. I want to be a Marine. I want to be like you. I told him, I was like, dude, we don't have to do much. Just tell me what I need to do to get in. Tell me what I have to do. And I'm in. Don't sell me. I'm already in.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, got my grade transcripts. He saw that I was not on point to graduate, so I had to go to continuation school to catch up on all the grades I had failed, and it was a lot of work for me. It was really, really hard, but I was going to do anything it took to be in the Marine Corps. At the time, in the 90s, I was really good at putting, you know, amps and subwoofers in people's cars. I was helping my friends out. That was something. Oh, you like wires? He's like, how do you feel about being a mechanic? I'm like, that'd be great. I love cars. He's like, what about, you know, being a mechanic on a plane? You want to be an aviation mechanic? You know, you get out and get a job with Southwest making $80,000. I'm like, wow. He's like, yeah, I want to do that. So originally my MOS was aviation mechanic. Mm. And I changed it later after 9/11. 9/11, it was early in the morning. I just woke up and I started my morning watching MTV rap videos. You know, as I'm getting dressed, every channel, it was the news coverage of this building. So I woke up and didn't see the first crash, but I remember just being glued to the television. You know, it was frantic and chaos. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, I don't think we've seen any kind of devastation like that. And my stepdad walks in. He's like, what do you guys want? You know, stop watching the movie. You know, get ready for school. And I was like, no, it's not a movie. I'm watching the news. And at that moment, while we're watching it, the second plane crashes into the towers. I'm like, what the hell? I have no idea what the World Trade Center is. I, you know, found out later it's in New York, and I get ready and I go to school, and I'm like, that is insane, you know? And I go into school not knowing, not grasping, how intense that was and the devastation that caused our country, you know, not watching the building come down. You know, I was watching that at school with everybody else. There was kids in my school that were crying. Some got pulled out of school because they had family in New York. At that time, I didn't know how to feel. It didn't even hit home, you know, till I grew up, until, you know, I watched something about 9/11 as an adult, you know, having kids, like what really happened. But I knew that, we took a hit, you know, as a nation, America took a huge hit, and I wanted to do something about it. I wanted to help. I guess I help avenge these people. So I contacted the recruiter that day or the day after, and I was like, hey, I want to go. There's going to be a war. That's what was on the news. That was all over. And I remember I was like, I want to be in infantry. I want to go fight. And he's like, well, you can't fight unless you're in infantry. And I was like, well, that's what I want to do. He's like, yeah, but you know, you don't have to be in infantry to go over there. You know, you can do an impact. You know, I found out later that he was actually a journalist or a combat camera, something along those lines. I don't even remember what his MOS was, but he did not want me to go. And he's like, yeah, dude, I don't think you need to do that. And I really wanted, I was set on it. And he's like, all right, I'm going to talk to your mom and we'll go from there. I'm like, no, I want to do it. Like my parents gave me, and my parents signed me away. I'm changing my job. He talked to my mom. My mom's like, I want him to do what he wants to do. I don't think she knew what it was. Mm-hmm. I don't think she understood infantry. I don't even know how to say that in Spanish. But I got my MOS changed, and from that moment on, I was like, I got to get to boot camp. Boot camp. You know, at that time, I went to boot camp in 2001. We did not have, I mean, we had the internet, right? And I don't want to sound old or date myself, but I don't think Google was a thing. So like, I couldn't just Google like what I was going to expect. So the only research I was able to do was watch Full Metal Jacket over and over again, to prepare myself. And I remember I was able to regurgitate those lines, you know, verbatim. But boot camp for me was definitely one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. I remember physically, mentally, but it was also very satisfying to I guess, claim the title, you know, of Marine was one of the greatest things. In boot camp, I was a house mouse. My stepdad was really strict growing up. So I always did certain, you know, when I learned a certain way to make things nice or tidy, I was very organized, right? So I had an immaculate footlocker, and one of the drill instructors was like, hey, fucking Linars. I couldn't pronounce my fucking name. He was Hispanic. He couldn't say Linares. I said, hey, fucking Linars. He's all, get my office or whatever the fuck whatever they called it. And he's like, he's like, you little shit. He's like, you're going to be my fucking house mouse. He's like, clean my fucking house. So I was a house mouse. So while everyone's getting fucking thrashed on the quarterdeck or they're running, you know, what is it, the Indy 500, and you're just fucking ass rag and you're mopping the goddamn the Bay Area. You guys do that?
Yeah. Describe that, though. Explain for people that might not understand that.
You know, I'm talking to you, but I forget that people that don't know.
Yeah.
We didn't have mops, and I don't know if we did or we didn't, but an ass rag is a small washcloth. And we would go ahead and utilize shaving cream, or not shaving cream, aftershave, which was Bulldog aftershave, water, and other cleaning products. It was a, it was a concoction of all sorts of weird shit. It was just make the floor smell good. You would put a washcloth, dunk it in there, and you would literally put both your hands on it and like just drag that across the ground. You're using your legs like in the, is it a yoga position? I don't know. Like a downward dog, and you dragged your body all the way down.
Did you do it where another Marine was holding up your legs and they pushed you across the squad bay?
No, no, no. But I was used to dust under the racks.
Yeah.
So they would, what would they do? They would just, I would start crawling and then someone would pull my hands from the other side of the bed and you do three recruits and that's how we used to dust. It's so fucked up, man. Yeah, but I was a house mouse. That's how I skated. I got to be in there and hear shit. Like, oh fuck, we're going to get thrashed today. Hey, doesn't matter what we do. We're going to fucking, you know, we're going to drill for 2 hours because we're fucking up. Yeah. I remember it was, I think it was like Christmas or New Year's, but you know, people would get these care packages, like grandma would send her cookies or whatever. And it's like, they would just bash these fucking kids. Like, you know, and they didn't want to eat the food. So I remember I was in there. I was like, you want that? He's like, you have 30 seconds. And they fuck with us. He's like, you know, countdown. He's like, fucking screaming, yelling at us. And I'm trying to eat a cookie. I'm trying to enjoy a fucking cookie. And at the same time, you know, I didn't want to, but I ate some cookies. I remember team week being in Pendleton. I was in the chow hall. I was in the kitchen doing dishes. I remember guys eating. Like, you have trays that are just being dumped on top of each other. Piles of trays and food mixing, peanut butter, whatever the fuck it was. A concoction of food, like a glob of food. And it's now down the line, sprayed with water, soap, soda. And guys would fucking scoop their hands in and just take a bite. You know, you had guys that, you know, were either on a diet or just fucking hungry. We were hungry all the time. And I remember eating chow even, you know, outside of Fleet Week. And you never had enough time. I remember just being fucked with. And you know, the guide would sit down. He was the last guy to sit down. And the drill instructors already knew they were going to fucking take this from us. Guide sits down. He takes one bite. He's like, you're fucking done. Get up. Get up. So we all have to get up with our trays. Some guys were probably just so tired. They wanted to close their eyes. They didn't get to even enjoy a bite. But I remember guys at the end, before dumping it in, you know, you'd rinse it off and then you dunk it. Guys didn't care, man. They scraped whatever. You couldn't even recognize what the food was. They were just eating it. So out of SY, we were stationed in North Carolina. I remember getting on a plane, LAX, flying over in our fucking uniforms, in our fucking alphas, and landing, getting picked up on a bus. You know, it wasn't really crazy, but like we were, you know, it's still junior Marines. But the ride from Raleigh, Durham, I believe. No, was it Raleigh, Durham? Yeah, it was Raleigh, Durham. It was a long bus ride. I just remember getting to Lejeune. Everyone's that passed out. They're waking you up. We're like, fuck, here we are. The last bus ride I had was, you know, from MEPS to fucking MCRD. So this is another terrifying fucking bus ride. I'm like, the Marine Corps is going to introduce all sorts of pain out of a bus ride. So we're expecting it to be frantic like that. We get out. This guy's like, all right, let's go. It was really calm. It was not what I anticipated, you know, getting to the fleet, going to our barracks. I'm like, oh, these look like, I grew up in apartments, you know, as a kid. I was like, oh, this looks like a really nice apartment, like condos. And we walk across the field. And as we form up and they start splitting us up, Alpha Company, Bravo Company, Charlie Company, we start walking in formation with our sea bags, our fucking day pack, whatever the fuck. And we start walking towards the barracks. And then all of a sudden, all these doors and windows start opening up. And it must have been, I think it was a Saturday morning. Maybe like, I don't know, because we had a night flight. So maybe like 6 or 7 in the morning. And then all these dudes coming out, you know, shirtless, fucking in civilian attire. It's their weekend. And they're like, hey, fucking boot. I've never heard that word. Hey, fucking boot, fresh meat, and just start fucking screaming. And then now every building, this is like a horseshoe, 3 buildings, Charlie, Alpha, and Bravo Company. And I'm walking towards my building and I'm seeing all these dudes just come out and start yelling and cussing at us. And I was like, these guys are leading us to this shit, to this fucking chaos. And I'm dragging my sea bag and I'm fucking pouring sweat. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? And it was chaotic, man. These guys are throwing bottles from the fucking, from the third deck, cans. And I'm like, this is like a fucking prison movie. Like, what the fuck? And we get walked and now we're in formation and they're like, yeah, you're mine, motherfucker. I'm gonna fuck. And like, I don't even, all this shit that happened. I just remember like being terrified. What the fuck is gonna happen next? And I'm looking to whoever, the dude in camis, the duty, you know, forming us up and getting our names. And it just seemed like it was fucking forever in this formation. But they're behind us, still fucking yelling and cussing at us. So, yeah, look at me again, motherfucker. Yeah. And the ones that had an easy enough name to read, they were fucking, they were after you for some reason. Or if they didn't like the way you looked. But it was very chaotic and very hectic. And I remember being moved into the, like, the duty area. Like, in what was the, inside of a, the, each floor had, like, a couch in a television room. Mm-hmm. And I remember you go to your appropriate floor and you kind of waited to be fucking ushered to your bedroom. But these guys were out there the entire time. Like, it was literally like a prison movie. You're walking by and they're just cussing you out. I'm like, I was like, hey, I made it, man. I got the EG. I earned the title. And they didn't give a fuck.
Wait, so what unit did you get dropped to?
I was with the 1st Battalion, 2nd Marine Division, Bravo Company. I was very disgruntled, you know, having been sent to North Carolina. So I got fucked with a lot. And not just after we got, you know, the boot dump, you know, that week, because it was Libo. So they said, once you get your assigned rooms, you know, formations on Monday, you're on your own. Like, that was it. So some of the guys had some horrible shit happen to them that weekend. I remember being a boot, getting woken up at 5 to go police call, cigarette butts, cans, bottles, people that shit in the dryer just to be dicks. But I mean, I seem like, I feel like I got in trouble a lot.
People would shit in the dryer?
There was a turd in the dryer one time. People would steal your laundry and then they're wearing it. And I'm walking. I remember a dude, I was from Orange County and I had like a skate shop shirt. It was like Laguna Beach or L&L, Laguna Beach. And so, it was an Orange County shirt. I got to find it in North Carolina. And it was taken out of the dryer and I was like, fuck, someone took my stuff. Oh, they took my jeans. And this fucking asshole is walking past me in the barracks wearing my shirt. And I'm like, hey, Corporal, that's my shirt. He's like, shut the fuck up, Linars, your fucking boot. It's not your shirt. I'm like, you're from like, I don't know. I think he's like Connecticut. I was like, you're not from Orange County, you fuck. There's no eBay back then. Like, there was nowhere for him to get that shirt. And he stole it. So, lost a shirt. But I was fucked with all the time. And I remember talking to a couple of guys after we got out. And they're like, you know what, Linares, we fucked with you a lot because you can take it. I was a smart ass, man. I was a smart ass and I like to start shit. I remember being in 29 Palms for CACs, you know, before we went to Iraq. And I just had this dude that I couldn't fucking stand. He hated me and I hated him. And he was a Lance Corporal. I promoted to Lance and I was like, hey, we're like the same rank now. Like, yeah, he's my team leader, right? And he fucking hated me. And none of these guys are deployed yet. Like, we're all officially boots. Like, this guy's just senior to me. I got to listen to him. Adam Marshall fucking wrecked my life constantly. God damn. I talked to these guys later. And, like, you were one of the funnest boots we ever had. Because I guess I could dish it out. Yay me. I was a fucking battered wife, I guess.
Dude, how was CAX for you? What was that like for you?
I can tell you that I was, we were in case bands. So case bands, the metal fucking little structure. It looks like a really giant doghouse. And back then it was just sand. You walk into a case band, it's sand. It's sand inside. It's sand. It's a fucking desert, right? And I would have to sweep the fucking case bands out. What the fuck am I? I would sweep forever. Like, we're going to the chow hall in there. You're fucking sweeping. So I'd have to drag all the costs from one side to the other to make the sand pretty. It's fucking sad. I got in trouble one time for, I don't remember what, but I got put on ice watch. So I had to make sure the ice in the cooler did not melt overnight. So I was on fire watch for like, I think one time it was like three on, three off. Jesus Christ, how do you stop ice from melting? fucking Marshall, Adam Marshall. I love the guy though, looking back on it. I, you know, it was fucking cool. Marine Corps. When we did the workup, you know, I don't remember much more than the little funny things like CACs, but I remember getting on ship. So it took forever to get from, you know, I think we left from North Carolina, South Carolina, and we, you know, we do the grid because it's a straight line is an act of war. So we got to where we were going. I don't remember. We ported in a grid pattern on ship, and I was on the USS Gunston Hall. I think it's since retired, but we landed, you know, we went through the Suez Canal, Egypt, all that shit on ship. And we finally got to the dirt. I don't recall where, but we go into Kuwait, and now we're in Kuwait, literally living the Jarhead movie. Anyway, Jarhead wasn't out yet, right? But, you know, to kind of put people in perspective, we did that. We sat in line. You chug water. We patrol the desert. We actually did fight scorpions and ants. We did all that shit. And we were in Kuwait for about 30 days in our FOB, and we were at Camp Shoot. It was nothing more than just dirt berms and tents. There's no AC. There's generators running power at night. We are shitting in the barrel, the drums. You know, I burn shit. I stir shit. I have some lovely Polaroids of that. You know, VA won't compensate me. But you know, we're here for 30 days, and in 30 days to a kid, I'm still a kid, seemed like forever. And we get to a point where, like, we're not going anywhere. You know, we're not going to go. You know, it's a show of force. At any time, we are getting the fuck out of here. We're going to go back home. I was like, man, I got all these things to do. And then the day comes where we get a mail dump. And I remember our camp, it's nothing to do, man. It's fucking, there's nothing out there. It's literally just Marines. And so we get like fucking 10 seven tons. Seven ton is a large Marine Corps fucking truck. It's, I don't know how to explain it. It's a semi truck, right? And they hold just bags of mail, and they were fucking orange and white bags, US mail. And these were all our care packages. And so we got mail. Fuck, we got mail. We hadn't had any mail since, you know, I think we got a couple mail dumps on ship. But now we spent about a month in country and nothing. And we get mail. For lunch, we had the Air Force bring us chow. We've been even eating MREs. We got a couple of hot rations, which are the higher end MREs, you know, from the chow hall. But we'd got sandwiches. You know, ham on bread, which, you know, it's not something they put in MRE. So we got Air Force chow. We got sodas. And then there was an ice delivery. We hadn't had ice yet. So we put ice in these bins. Dude, this was fucking, you know, utopia for us. We hadn't had anything, any luxuries. And end of the night, satellite phone. Fucking satellite phone calls to everybody. It was staff and officers first. Then it was married Marines. And then everybody else. And I must have waited in line. I seemed like, I don't know, over 12 hours, you know, just waiting for my phone call. I called home. I think I talked to my mom very briefly. Hey, I'm in Kuwait. I'm good. Hey, I'm good, Mom. I'm just waiting to get back on ship. I'll be home soon. And the next day we get briefed and like start loading the tracks up. I'm like, all right, we're going home. And I got a lot of pictures of us standing by. It must have been about a whole day's worth to load all our shit. And I'm like, all right, we're bringing our, you know, we're bringing all our stuff. Like, we got to be getting out of here. And that was when we started the trek from Kuwait in track formation headed to Iraq, which I believe was about maybe 2 days, maybe one night, 2 days. So from the morning, and I remember sleeping out in the middle of Kuwait in the desert. I'm like, where the fuck are we going? And we come out to the middle of the desert, and I remember we stopped, and there's a lot of, I must have passed out, and I remember waking up to like a drill. What the fuck is happening? And we drop ramp in track formation, so there's just, we're in a kind of a line, and I remember we get out of the tracks, and I cannot make out what's happening. All this fucking madness on the radio, and we look out into the distance, and we see fucking rockets flying out of the ground. And I guess we are just thinking, what the fuck is it? They're aimed towards us. So all of a sudden our staff NCO comes from his track, runs over, he's like, gas, fucking gas. So we are in the dark in the middle of the desert, and we go into full mob gear. And I remember being in mob gear all the way through the invasion. You know, the next day we end up hitting our, nothing happened that day. We obviously didn't get bombed, but that night, you know, I believe there were Kuwaiti or Iraqi base that were firing Starburst. I don't know. It was a test. I don't recall what happened, but there was rockets that came out of the ground and fucking freaked everybody out. Got in a full mob suit. We ended up digging in small skirmishers, so about a foot deep. And literally just, it was a very shallow grave for those of us that thought it was the end. It's also a very scary moment to think that this hole you're burying is where you're going to fucking die. So the next morning was the last push to Iraq. And that's where, I remember stopping along the way and, filling up tracks and tanks, cause tanks are in the tail end. And we finally get to a position and, we get, you know, we stop, we're online, we're kind of waiting to hear what the track guys are telling us, because there's a guy in the back, the engineer, whatever he is, and he's on the radio, and he's kind of relaying what they're saying. Hey, we're stopped. There's a city. There's a town. And we're just sitting there like, shut up. Everyone's just talking. Everyone's farting. You know, just fucking young Marines farting, eating sunflower seeds, just not paying attention. And I remember he's like, I remember hearing a tink. It's like, dude, and over the radio. He's like, dude, this fucking, there's a dude on the roof who just shot at the tracks. And I remember the tracker's like, he's like, woohoo. He's like, yeah, we just got combat action. We just fucking all got fucking a car, combat action ribbon. And we're like, hell yeah. You know, And then I guess over the radio, the tank is given the order to go ahead and fucking level that building. And they fucking level whoever the fuck had that pop shot hit us. And that literally was the first round fired to initiate the war. And then just later on, the madness that is the Battle of the Bridges in the city of Nasiriyah. Barreling down these streets, headed into what potentially was the last day for a lot of these kids. You know, if you can recall, Nasiriyah is also where the A-10 took out all those Marines in a track. He couldn't make them out from the air. Looking back now, man, I don't remember much, man. It was so surreal. It's like a fucking video game. You know, back then I don't recall first shooter games like they are now. I don't play those. They fucking bug the shit out of me. I guess I'd like to say that, having experienced it for reals, I don't see the joy in playing a fucking game. Maybe that's just me, but it was fucking crazy. And they ask you, people ask me, are you scared? Did you kill anybody? It doesn't bother me anymore. But I will say that having had no other training other than the shit that was just hammered into my fucking mind for the last year, I literally just resorted to what I was trained. You know, muscle memory, that's what I fucking did. I'm up, he sees me, I'm down. You know, bounding from fucking building to building, shooting at fucking flashes that I saw. We were providing security for a convoy, and I believe that's Jessica Lynch and all that. I don't remember the unit. I don't recall. I just remember we were following the army. Hey, they're lost. Hey, man, we don't got comms with the army. Okay, they just fucking left. All right, we don't know where the army's at, so we follow in, and then they're like, later on, I remember being told, hey, there's no combatives, Nasiriyah is fucking clean, just fucking sweep through, we're providing security. But it actually ended up being, you know, a fucking ambush, you know, it was an ambush alley, and it was elevated positions, it was fucking narrow road, a lot of the tracks got hung up on electric lines or power lines, and it was pretty fucking bad. The rooftops were just over so they can look into any of the tracks that were opened up. You know, they have the rooftop and you can open up and you literally can see clearly into the entire track. The track is a tank without a fucking, a main gun, without the cannon. But, Bravo Company, went around. We were tasked with going around. I think Charlie and Alpha Company were Charlie Company was supposed to go across the street, across the city and provide security on the other side. There's two bridges through the Euphrates River. And Alpha Company was on the closer end. Charlie was supposed to be in the farther end. We were supposed to go around. Some of our tracks got stuck in the mud. And so we were going on foot through the city to get to the other side, to the objective, to help Charlie. And I remember over the radio, the tracks got hit. Later finding out that it was an A-10 Warthog that came through and just fucking made Swiss cheese of this fucking tank and the Marines inside. And the end result was the A-10 could not identify the track. So they saw it as an enemy because of the power lines were so low. They weren't able to get comms out that they were successfully on the other side of Nasiriyah, and they were going to provide security, so the A-10 fucking wiped them out. This whole day was a fucking cloud. It's just fog. They say fog of war, right? I remember moments. I remember at the end making it to the other side of the city and providing security because Charlie was non-combat effective. They lost a fucking track and all the Marines that were in there. The guys in the tank were, or in the track were inside, you know, and when we made it to the other side and we were set in position, we were hearing rounds coming down range. And it was the ammo that was under the benches of the track. So these guys were just, the guys that were still inside, I imagine were just being riddled with fucking rounds that were being cooked off. We had 203 rounds, smoke. This fucking thing was just a fucking crazy fucking pile of fire and smoke. Mm. And we made it to the other side. We'd set up a fucking defensive position, and we all pushed out Bravo Company on the upside of the bridge. And I was a fucking boot, and I got put on the berm, pointed outboard. And I remember one of the tankers was a lieutenant colonel or a colonel. And the stories I heard at the end, I saw him, but I was in the city at the time, but he said he was not going to leave any Marine behind. And, he grabbed, bodies and he was throwing them on the tank. And he was taking them out of the city. Yeah, it was fucking weird to turn around, you know, in my position on the berm and see this tank, man. And it had this guy, fucking amazing looking back, but this guy had grabbed bodies. He grabbed flak jackets. He said, I'm not going to leave. And I remember hearing him yelling at people, and he was, he had brass, which was black, right? It's not shiny. But he's like, I'm not leaving a single fucking American behind. And he's grabbing flaks and packs and Kevlars. And he's throwing them on the tanks and fucking getting them out of the city to the other side. And some of them were pretty fucking bad. They were wrapped in poncho liners. You know, at that point, you know, this was a day-long fucking conflict. And we had Cobras and Hueys flying over. And I remember seeing Cobras fucking go through the city and just fucking hellfire. Just fucking rain down on these motherfuckers. And, you know, we're at the other end. You know, there's no action for us. We're laying down, thinking that there'd be another wave of insurgents coming through. And, I just remember wanting to turn around and fucking run back into the city, but watching all this devastation come out the end, you know, all these people that were getting pulled through. So that was day one. And, I think we stayed in that position on the other side of Nasiriyah. It was a bridge crossing the Euphrates, so that was the entrance into the MSR, the main supply route. And so we stayed there and held that position for, I want to say, weeks. And I remember, seeing articles and reading about it later that President Bush said if Baghdad was a jewel, Nasiriyah was a treasure chest. And so for the actions of our unit and command, we were given a presidential unit citation. I remember being out there on the other side of the bridge. We had to set up a vehicle checkpoints. You know, we had to control the traffic mainly so that we can utilize, you know, our units and military to roll through. But there was people that were constantly trying to leave the city. And I remember at one point we were on the other side of the bridge and we had, I don't know, a fucking mob of people trying to come through, and we were not to let anybody pass. They were all insurgents, you know. It went from being non-insurgents to now a fucking cesspool of Taliban that were trapped, you know, in that city. And we just had various units go through and sweep and take out Jessica Lynch and find all these caches. But I remember one time, there must have been about 50 fucking people trying to leave the city at one time, and they were armed. And so we have no idea if they were, you know, we have no idea. Looking back, I remember seeing armed people heading towards the bridge, like, fucking, here we go. And they called in hellfire, and seeing fucking Cobra go ahead and light these fucking dudes up was fucking insane. And, you know, people always, you know, tell you, like, you know, we pray. I ended up, remember looking like a ghetto Mr. T when I ended up getting care packages. I had so many rosaries or rosemaries and beads and crosses that anyone mailed to me, you know, churches, schools. And I put every one of those motherfuckers on, and I wore them. And I remember just praying to God second, because I prayed for clean and clear skies so the Cobras can provide overhead coverage. But coming home, it was a little crazy. Actually, I recall coming back on ship, and it was a fucking line to wait for a satellite phone or to use the phone on ship to call home. But I called home. I made it, made it through the line. I called home, and I remember calling my brother, you know, hey, coming back, you know, and I remember just feeling weird about talking to him. Mail wasn't consistent, so shit was spotty. You know, I'd find something out weeks later. But I remember calling my brother, and he's like, you know, I actually went into the Marine Corps on the buddy program. I had a buddy that joined with me. I forgot to mention that. His name was Scott Oldroyd. And we joined in the buddy program. He ended up going to be a combat engineer. He was stationed in Okinawa when I went to Iraq. And so he was not going to combat. And I called my brother, see how everything's going. He's like, hey, man, Scott's in the hospital. I was like, what happened? He's like, I don't know, man. I think Scott's dead. I was like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? And I didn't have his unit. You know, I hadn't seen him. He'd been from school to Okinawa. And I hadn't talked to them. Cell phones weren't, you know, it wasn't the way it is now. You know, you couldn't just reach somebody on Facebook and Instagram. So I'm like, I'm trying to figure this out. I'm like, all right, I got to find out what's happening. So I called a mutual friend, and they're like, yeah, Scott was in an accident in Okinawa. He got shot in the head, you know? And I was like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? I was like, the family's trying to get to Okinawa. And I didn't know what to do. And they're like, you know, you need to get a Red Cross message. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, I can't do that. You guys have to. And I remember trying to, you know, for the days that followed, trying to get through to somebody. I mean, my parents barely spoke English. How the fuck are they going to get a Red Cross message to me? But, you know, he passed away. He ended up getting shot in the head, playing around with another dude on post. You know, they were armed in a post. They were fucking around in the Humvee, and a round went off out of a pistol and shot him in the head. Oh. So he was in a coma for about a couple of days, and they said he would be hooked up to machines the rest of his life, and his family said, we don't want that life for him. So once their entire immediate family came to Okinawa to see him, they pulled a plug. So I remember when I got back from Iraq, you know, I graduated high school. He was graduated a year before me, but I remember going out to see people, and, you know, I'm in North Carolina, I'm in Iraq, and I just wanted to see everybody. I wanted to party. I wanted to do what I'd missed out. I didn't get to party. I wanted to party. And that was probably a lot of what put me in a dark place, was just drinking as heavily as I did. But I remember coming across people, and they're like, you know, Scott died, man. He wasn't supposed to die. It's supposed to be you. You know? And I was like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? It's like, yeah, man. He's like, everybody loves Scott. You know? It should have been you. And that fucked me up. So we came back, and it not too long after, you know, we are doing the same old shit we're doing as grunts, you know, training, fucking field training. And then we start another workup to go back overseas. I remember getting the opportunity. We need fucking snipers. We need fucking recon Marines. We need all these other badass to come out of you guys. You guys are now combat veterans. You guys are experienced. We need you, right? So I remember a couple of us talking about it. Like, dude, I'm in fucking top physical shape. I was running fucking PFTs under 19 minutes, 20 fucking pull-ups. You know, you're in shape. And I remember going out for the fucking recon endoc, making it. I guess a couple of us had high enough scores that they gave us. I don't know how it works. We got orders to go to force recon at a Lejeune. So the day we went to go check in, this is prior to finding out we were deploying again. The day we went to check in, there was a master sergeant we were talking with, you know, at their fucking base or their part of the base. And he's like, hey, I just want you guys to know 1-2 is going back. So if you guys want to go ahead and leave my office, I'll shred these papers and nothing's going to happen to you. You know, fucking you were never here. And so I believe there was 5 or 6 of us and we all got up and walked out and went back to our unit and we went back to Iraq. We flew over instead of going on ship, so we didn't have the ship life, you know, the good crab eats, mid rats, mm-hmm. you know, eating in the middle of the night. It was fucking awesome. But it was a different mission, you know. When we went to Iraq the first time, there was you know, Geneva Convention. It was war. It was conflict. You know, we shot at whatever the fuck we wanted to. It sounded like cowboys, but yeah, we were able to defend ourselves. And I think when we went back the second time, some of the officers were better briefed. Maybe there was more intel. But it got to the point in the middle of our second deployment where we had to be prepared to explain ourselves if we were engaged. If we were engaged, you know, who we were engaging, who we shot at, you know, and at that time is when they were, we were trying to win hearts and minds. You know, we'd conduct a raid in Iraq, and sure enough, 2 or 3 days later, we'd have a unit that was out there putting up a new door and giving these people muffins. And, you know, we were still getting fucking hit. We weren't in a FOB. We weren't on a base. We were protecting oil refineries. That's what we did. We went from an oil refinery to a fucking FOB. And it was just different, man. It wasn't the same. But I feel like I was hardened, had calloused a little bit. I was more aggressive. We are losing a lot more people in our company. So people had a lot of resentment. There was a lot of anger when we patrolled. So when we came back from our first deployment, I had 2 roommates, Carol and Charles, David Carroll and Charles Hansen. It was late at night. I remember one of my buddies said, hey man, the patrol for my company, my platoon, one of the patrols just got hit. Like, what the fuck? What happened? It's like, dude, it's a fucking, there's the IED. So they dug under the asphalt. Asphalt's not like it is here, man. It's fucking dirt. And in the middle of a fucking dirt town is an asphalt road. And so they'd dug under the dirt about 1 or 2 feet and they placed a fucking a mortar round and they blew it up and hit one of our vehicles. And my roommate was in that vehicle on the back. He was, I believe he was on the gunner. So he was actually trapped under. He was pinned by the weapon system. And so my other roommate was actually on patrol with him. And, you know, and so the patrol comes in. It gets over the radio. They'd been hit. You know, we suffered some casualties and we're trying to find out who the fuck just got hit. Who's fucking KIA. And so we're all just fucking just gathered around the fucking the CP or the COC. And then they come back and these guys are fucking they are fucking wrecked, man. They, you know, are bloody and crying and fucking angry and upset. And I remember then actually we all just go back to our fucking tent. It's just a tent with plywood. And these guys, dude, everybody loved Charles, man. He's a great dude. And he's gone. You know, I had lunch with him before and probably played cards. You know, we're in the same tent. And he wasn't coming back. We ended up punching out a patrol to go look for whoever the fuck did it. There's no evidence. There's nothing. But the level of aggression that was in that fucking door-to-door fucking... We went door-to-door through the city, just fucking wrecking that town, looking for caches, firearms. And it was tough, man. People were just angry. When we did some runs, like we would provide convoy security, so we protect the convoy. Well, you got to be on one of those convoys. You were going to an army base. Fuck, we went to an army base. They had a fucking movie theater. They had a fucking Baskin Robbins, a Pizza Hut, and these were all Pizza Hut trailers. A fucking gyro spot, like dude, it was fucking insane. Like we had these weird fucking giant plastic drums, and I believe they look like septic tanks, right? But we had those outside of our tents where we would have a truck come by every morning and dump blocks of ice. And that's where we would throw our water bottles. And as the sun rose in the sky and melted the ice, that was our refrigerator. So when you go to these fucking army bases, man, we got pizza. We got batteries for our Walkman. You know, there was no iPods. I had most of the pictures I have, and fucking all the pictures I had were from wind-up cameras. So I remember being able to buy another disposable camera. So, and I don't know what it looked like. If you fucking blinked, I lost that. That picture was gone, right? Mail is consistent or more consistent than we get care packages. And there were these little portable DVD players, right? We didn't have laptops, just a little portable DVD player. Plus we'd buy little bootlegs from the guys outside the base, right? Or in town when we got to. And so we would have like a whole fucking squad of dudes or a whole platoon if you weren't doing anything. If this was like your down week, we would just be watching fucking Band of Brothers was a big one, Sopranos, right? So we'd fucking incoming. And then you hear that shout, you're like, jeez, fuck, pause, let's go. So we go outside to these concrete fucking HESCO barriers. There's like a U-shaped concrete building. We all kind of were just sitting there, just, all right. And then you just be sitting there waiting for the all clear, which was either a siren or, you know, someone coming through all clear. And we just clear out. We'd go to the FOB. We knew we were going to the FOB. And at this point, we're just bored. Right. So we found where the trucks were hidden, refrigerated trucks, at the base where they would cook our food. We were getting food cooked by, Kuwaiti and Iraqi people, chicken, rice, whatever. Right. I mean, that's the chow hall, but it wasn't MREs anymore, for the second deployment. And, one of the trucks had chicken wings. So he had these bags of chicken wings. So we were like, they don't even lock it. Dude, let's just go grab some chicken. So we would go into this fucking giant semi-refrigerated truck and we'd all grab like a bag of fucking wings. And in the chow hall, they had just pallets of fucking water, pallets of pemmican beef jerky, Slim Jims, and Frank's. What the fuck is Frank's? I didn't even know what Frank's was. This is a hot sauce. Let's grab it. So we would dig a hole at the FOB. Or even on base, and we'd dig a hole and find wire or rig a way to make a grill, and we would make hot wings. Just chopping up pieces of wood and grilling our own wings, and we just doused them in fucking Frank's Red Hot Sauce. So I remember just, you know, that was the thing. I'd come back from base, from patrol. Dude, put the wings on. Who's doing wings? All right, cool. We're gonna have wings.
Nice.
Transitioning was tough, man. I got out in 2005 and it was scary. What am I going to do? I went back to mommy and daddy's house. Oh, mommy's house. My parents split. Back to mommy's house. I had already had a job over the phone that I was going to start. And I was back home. You know, I was back home. I was back with friends. I'm going to fucking party and I'm going to work. And that's what you're supposed to do. I drank. I fucking drank, man. I don't think I remember ever being scared till I wasn't drinking. When I wasn't drunk, I was thinking about drinking. I numbed myself, man. I fucking medicated like a motherfucker. Never did drugs, man. I was afraid to do what people were still doing. Guys I never left that were civilians that were home, I couldn't talk with them, man. I get to the point, man, Iraq is fresh, man. People still remember fucking watching it in night vision, you know, fucking tracers and rounds. So that's the fucking conversation I had with everybody I met. Anyone I was trying to fucking meet, drink with, or fucking party, or fucking lay in bed with, wanted to ask me, did you kill anybody? Did you fucking kill anybody? I mean, when I fucking kill anybody, it made me angry. It made me fucking angry. I'd fucking lose my shit. I was numb, man. I would drink to black out. I didn't drink to have, it wasn't fun anymore. And I went years like that. I felt alone in a crowded room. I'd be at a house party every fucking weekend. I'd invite people in my house, trash my mom's fucking house. You know, I had roommates. We trashed the fucking house. That's what we did. Hey, don't worry. I have a house. We have a pad we can drink at. My mom didn't know what to do. My mom just knew that I was in Iraq and I was in a dark place and she didn't know what to do. She would just cook for me. She did what she thought she was supposed to do, was be there, but she was not there. And, you know, I bring it up to my mom and my brother because they didn't write to me when I was in Iraq either. They were going through their own battles. You know, I came back to that fucking stepdad and my mom. They split. My mom said, my sons are growing up. You know, my brother and I are a year apart. She's like, I'm done. I'm done with this fucking marriage. So she splits from my stepdad. She's out on her own, living with my brother. And I was alone. I was with them, but I was alone. They didn't link with me. They couldn't connect. They didn't understand. Wasn't until, you know, years later, you know, and I'm still fucking broke and I am not talking to my mom because I, one of my fucking rages, I don't recall what it's about. My mom had a hallway in her condo, really nice condo. She did it all by herself, man. This woman, as an immigrant, purchased the home with my dad. They split. She does it on her own, gets another place, you know, and puts these pictures of her kids up. And in a fucking rage, I smashed every picture off this fucking wall that I can reach. And my mom just had it. My mom's had it. She's like, you gotta go. You can't be here. So, you know, I moved out, moved in with buddies, and that shit continued, man. I'd wake up in my fucking dress blues coat. I'd have camis. I remember one time I tried to cami my fucking face up. I don't know what I was doing, man. Trying to relive some fucking days that weren't there. The VA was not an option. I'm not a pussy. I'm a fucking grunt, man. I'm a Marine. What am I going to go cry to somebody else for? Just fucking drink. I'm going to drink.
You were telling me a story about seeing that semi crash into that vehicle.
So, second deployment, come back. I get out. I'm out. I'm out. My buddy's out. And he's in up north. He's Northern California. And he calls me up. And I want to say it's Memorial Day or Labor Day. It was one of the holiday, right? And so he's like, yeah, my girlfriend, my whatever she was, has a place in Havasu. We should go fucking party. Let's go. And I was like, all right, cool. And so I'm like, all right, cool. Let me get the time off. And I get the time off and fucking load the truck up. Take my girlfriend at the time. Wasn't my wife. Sorry. So we load up and a buddy of mine's like, I'm not doing anything this weekend, man. I want to party. I'm like, dude, I'm going to Havasu. You want to come? I'm thinking, you know, girls go wild. There'd be pasties and sea-doos and that's what we're going to go do. So that's, I fucking made him believe that. And so he gets in the car and he just fucking just follows us out. So it's me, girlfriend, and a civilian buddy. We head to Havasu. On our ride, we left after I got off of work. It's dark. I don't know, after 7 p.m. And we're driving down this two-lane road, right? One in each direction. And we come up to an intersection, like a T-intersection. And I can see that there's a truck and it's like on its side. And there's people on the side of it, hysterical. So we pull over. I slow down. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, what the fuck is happening? I pull over. Something didn't feel right. I've passed, you know, accidents before and didn't think much of it. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm thinking, we got to help these people. You know, there's some ladies there. I'm still a gentleman. I'd like to help. And so I pull over to the side and this lady's like, oh my God, there's a fucking accident. They're in the car. They're still in the car. So I'm like, dude, hey, Roger, get the fuck out. He's like, what? So He gets out and he follows me. So I'm like, what happened? Like, they're over there. So I come up to a Jeep Grand Cherokee that's on its side, you know, in front of the semi. The semi, I fucking T-boned it. I guess the kids in the car were going, or they ran the stop sign and the fucking semi hit it, or the light. So ultimately the Jeep is on its side. There's a couple of dudes, two or three dudes there. I'm like, what the fuck happened? He's like, dude, they're still inside. They're not responsive. So a couple of us get on the side and the Jeep falls over and now it's all wheels down. And, there's three people, the driver, passenger seat, and then behind the passenger is another person. We open the door. Hey, 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 no one's responding. So now it's myself, Roger, and two or three other guys. And we grab this gentleman and take him out. And, he's not responsive. At this time, another car pulls up in front of mine or behind. I just saw another car come up. And I remember someone just fucking darts towards us. He's like, hey, man, I'm a fucking corpsman. He's like, hey, fucking doc. He's like, dude, these guys, they're out. They're out. He's like, yeah, I'm a Marine, man. I don't know if that meant anything. I just had to let him know. So he's like, all right, dude, let's get him out of here. He's like, dude, drag that guy further away. So he and my buddy pull that guy away. And now we have two or three dudes trying to get the passenger out. And I couldn't fit in there to help. And I don't know what I can do, but I think the seatbelt stuck. But they're there for more than I felt comfortable with. So I remember grabbing the door and I put my foot down. I put my knee down and I just fucking move forward. And I'm not a big dude, man. At the time, I don't know. I'm still little. I'm like 165 pounds. And I just fucking put down and the fucking door just flattens out alongside of the trunk or the hood. And then so we were able to pull the guy out. While we pull the guy out, semi truck is on fire or starting to spark, or there's a flame by the thing. It catches and literally comes up to it, races up to the Jeep Grand Cherokee, and then that light's on fire. And these guys they fucking back away. You know, the driver is the only one left. And so I remember just kind of, I had a moment where I can see the guy, and the dude was unconscious, but like he had, I don't know if it was a spine or something, but it was something sticking out of his chest. I don't know. I'm assuming he got fucking hit by a semi. It's probably a spine. And he's not responsive. The fucking car catches slowly on fire and starts picking up the side of the Jeep. And I remember he starts to fucking move, to twitch, to being on fire. And the doc, he's like, dude, we gotta get the fuck out of here. And he pulls me and it didn't explode. It wasn't anything fucking phenomenal, but it's on fucking fire. The car is on fire. The fuel is fucking sparking it. And, so we go back. Doc says, this guy's out. The other guy is got a pulse. So he has my friend. He's like, dude, fucking clock his pulse, check his pulse. I want you to fucking tell me what his rate is. So my buddy's freaking out and he's fucking checking his pulse. He's like, he doesn't have a pulse anymore. And I guess essentially the guy dies in his lap. At this point, fucking, we have lights and sirens on scene. The cops are there. I don't remember if there's an ambulance, helicopter comes. And the corpsman goes, makes contact. And I'm like, dude, we got to go. You know, our job is done. There's nothing we can do here. And my buddy's still in shock. He's fucking quiet. He's not saying anything. He's fucking stunned. And so I remember walking away. Just to make sure I was clear, I tried to approach an officer and just, I guess, let him know, hey, do you want anything from me? I was here. I saw, you know, fucking anything. And he literally wanted me out of the scene. So, hey, dude, we got it. Please move to the side. My buddy and I load up. Mike, let's go. We got to go to Havasu, man. Let's get the fuck out of here. Yeah. And he gets in the car. He didn't say a word. My girlfriend is in the car. She's had just watched this whole thing from the passenger seat. I don't think she got out at all. And we're driving and it's quiet, not a word. And I don't remember doing much more than turn the music up, maybe. We get to the next gas station. Hey, I got a piss, man. And it hasn't hit me yet. Like, this is just another day. And I get to the gas station, you guys want anything? He's like, no, no. I was like, all right. I get up, I can get out of the car and make my way to the bathroom and fucking do my thing. And I go to wash my hands and I fucking see that fucking, you know, I'm covered in blood. I have blood on my hands, got blood on my shirt. And it hit me. I was, everybody that was at that pump, you know, it's a gas station, the lights are on, it's bright, it's not anything, you can see everything. There's two people stunned in my car that are not moving. And I returned to a car with people just staring at me. They probably think I just fucking buried somebody. And I remember going back, going to the car, making it to my buddy's house. And he's like, dude, what the fuck happened? Like, oh, bro, fucking car flipped over. Explained the whole thing to him. He's like, dad, that's fucking nuts, man. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm good. And he and I started drinking beers. And these motherfuckers took shots and went to bed. And I remember looking it up later. Yeah, all three dudes died. All three guys died. The guy on the scene burned. The guy in the backseat fucking dead on impact. And the other dude fucking, I guess, didn't, the guy that my buddy didn't feel a pulse to, made it on a helo and died on the way to hospital. But
wow. That's wild.
He's still a little messed up. I remember bringing it up years later. You know, we got together, I want to say like even 5-6 years later. Like we were just talking. I was like, yeah, how you been, man? Good. Oh, good. Dude, you remember the Havasu trip? He fucking, it hit him. Yeah. And he's like, dude, I still have nightmares about it. I met my wife out of SOI, you know, in 2002, April 4th. She thinks it's, she'll say, she's like, oh, how the fuck do you remember? I was like, I met you, you know, I'm a fucking angel. She saved my life. But I knew I was in North Carolina. I knew I was going to Iraq. So we maintained a friendship. You know, I still have letters she wrote to me and I wrote to her. We have these letters. But I came back. She found out I got out and we found each other and we tried to date, but I was fucking, I was not in the right space and she didn't, you know, want to be around it. She didn't recognize the man I was or the person I was. So she would keep her distance. I don't blame her. You know, most of our arguments or most of our fights were just arguing because I was a fucking drunk. That's all I wanted to do. So she would keep me at an arm's distance, you know, like a fucking drill instructor. And, you know, at one point, we just connected. We met, we saw each other at a bar and I saw her and I felt safe. You know, I was out with friends. It was like 2008 and I saw her and I think we were just leaving, but I don't know. I don't know. I out of a crowd of people, the fucking light hit her right. And I was like, I need to find her. I need to get her. And, she called me that night. She remembered my number. You know, it wasn't like it is now, you know, so technology's not the same. I keep saying that, but it was so hard to find people back then. Like it is now, like you just can find anybody on any fucking platform. But then it was different. She remembered my number.
Wow.
And she called me and we just got to talking and it took me back to when we were kids, you know, and you'd be on the phone fucking connected to the goddamn kitchen on like 30 feet of cord. And we just talked and we talked and we talked and we started dating. And I don't know what it was about this time that it was different, but I was ready to accept help. I was ready to confide in someone, to talk to somebody. And she was there, man. She was my best friend. And I, you know, I fell in love with my best friend again. Mm-hmm. And God bless her because she stayed. And there was a number of times where I thought, you know, it wasn't an immediate change, man. It took years. This woman's a fucking hard ass because she put up with me for everything, for the darkness, for, you know, not being able to provide. You know, I have a family with this woman, you know, one kid, and fucking two kids and three kids. And she stuck by me. She fucking believed in me. She knew who I was. She loved me and she took care of me and she was there to listen, to tell me to shut the fuck up, to, you know, fucking get my shit straight. She, you know, one of the things I'll always remember and I still to this day is, you know, when you create a Marine or when a Marine's made, when a Marine's born, when a Marine gets out, like we are these fucking amazing tools, these fucking guard dogs, if you will. And a guard dog without a purpose, without a fucking flock to protect, without a job is essentially a fucking pit bull. You're just violent. You're waiting to fucking hurt somebody. And I think when you find the right woman or man, you know, whatever, when you find that person to kind of fucking focus you, to kind of point you in the right direction, essentially your guide, you know, your other half, it is fucking magical. And once I found purpose, you know, as a father, as a husband, as a provider, as a protector, man, I was born again hard. It was laser focused. And, you know, every time I, you know, fucking lose, my wife puts me back in the focus. And at one point, you know, still struggling with my demons and shit, it took my wife telling me, you know, she's like, and I was in an argument. And I just remember, I was like, you know, I'm fucking not happy. She's like, oh, Jesus Christ. All you do is talk about the Marine Corps. Why don't you go back to the fucking Marine Corps? And that kind of put me in the reserves. And on that path, and I remember thinking like, Jesus Christ, he's reservist. You want me to be a reserve? I can't go back to active duty. What the fuck is, what are reserves? Like, oh, 1 week in a month. Oh, great. You know, I need to be around fucking warriors. I need to be around killers. You know, I need to be around my people. And so I went through the process. I talked to a prior service recruiter, and this is all literally what helped me. At the same time as having my wife in my corner, find a path. I went to the reserves. You know, I went through the whole process. Got accepted to not accepted. They I got sworn in, and I got assigned to a unit. It was Golf Company 223, and we were at a Los Alamitos. And I went there, and I remember checking in. Oh, what a douchebag! I had gel in my hair. My hair was spiked. It's 2009. I go to check in and I'm in civilian attire, and these guys are actually, you know, just got back from deployment. So this is their ball. So it was their first drill from getting back from deployment. It's November. And I check in, and these guys are all talking about the ball and their tickets, and they got to go. And I just remember these guys are all looked at me like, what a piece of shit. This motherfucker comes here for a drill with gel in his hair. Like, my hair is spiked. I look like, I don't know, like fucking Dragon Ball Z character. But so I was like, oh, great, these fucking clowns, man, these fucking guys. And so after that drill, you know, the next drill comes, and you know, I come collect clean shaven, and you know, I got my fade going, and I'm a Marine. And I ended up finding out that more than half the guys there were prior service, active duty, fucking my people. These fucking killers. These are fucking warriors. And I ended up just finding a good bunch of dudes. And I ended up networking, finding how to write a resume, you know, how to translate what I did in the Marine Corps to paper to get me to where I am today. I found out about the GI Bill, how to process the GI Bill. I started going to school again. You know, and then you talk with guys, you know, I didn't even know what executive protection was. I didn't know what that was. Like, your security guard. Yeah, no, it's executive protection. You know, I learned again, man, it was a great place to network, a great place to focus. It was a great pivot point for me in my life. And I found a good bunch of dudes. I found fucking friends. Mm-hmm. And then I found myself looking forward to and being excited about going to drill. And I met some of the most intelligent men I've ever met in my life. These guys are building rocket engines. These dudes are fucking cops, sheriffs. These guys are fucking dentists, chiropractors. These guys had careers, and they still chose to serve, you know, in the military. And a majority of them had families, had children. And I just realized, like, fuck, being in the reserves is so fucking hard. And I had a newfound respect for these dudes that were living separate lives and still volunteered to go, probably loss in pay, time away from their family. I was going there to heal, and these guys were going there to serve, right? So it, you know, it took me a little bit to get traction and try to repurpose what I wanted to do and contribute more. You know, I didn't think I did enough in active duty. I kind of fucked around a lot. So being in the reserves was,
how long did you do?
I did 6 years
in the reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And then, you know, I just found the right time to get out.
Any last words?
Thank you for your time, man. I think what you're doing is awesome. I fucking love the stories that you put up there. It's great to even hear something as cheesy as boot camp stories, man. Those all take me back. You know, like it probably do many of your viewers. And I hope you continue to do this for a very long time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you coming and taking the seat, brother.
Thank you.
Got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghosts of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.